You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. This is Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton. Episode 98, Creating a New Reality. Today on The Impromptu, the inevitability of a completely connected society. It's real, and it's coming, for better or worse. It's easy to concede to our deepest fears about the privacy implications of technologies like augmented reality, but what about the tangible benefits in everyday life? This week, we delve into a recent breakthrough demo created on an iPhone using Apple's new ARKit API. Also, iPhone 8 bezel-less designs confirmed, and we salute the iPod Nano and Shuffle as Apple discontinues them from its product lineup. Stay tuned for that discussion and more. That's coming up next on The Impromptu.
So as iOS 11 marches ever onward, ever closer to release in the much-awaited September event, where the iPhone 8/Pro is set to be unveiled, we are seeing lots and lots of crazy ARKit demos, but none crazier than the one that was just shown off the other day. Someone recreated the effect from the Aha music video for Take On Me, and like they just completely recreated it. So on their phone, a portal opened up, and the sketched guy singing appeared, and everything behind him was sketched, and then he walked through the portal with his phone, and then looked back, and everything else was sketched except for that portal where he could still see the quote-unquote real world. And his family members were walking around, and they were sketched as well. It was all happening in real time. The actual music video back in...
And this was all played to the Take On Me song, right? I mean, it was done in that style.
Yeah, so that very, like, sketched out effect where everything's just, like, all the lines on objects are just these thick kind of ink lines. Apparently, the original music video to do that effect, they rotoscoped it, and it took them 16 weeks. And here, this guy has it running on his phone in real time.
Well, that's what blew me away by it, and this doesn't happen often, but I was getting goosebumps that we live now in an age where we have technology that can do this really cheaply and really quickly.
Yeah.
And in addition to the weeks involved in rotoscoping, which is really just a fancy way of saying they animated over top of the live footage.
Yeah.
Keep in mind the cost of the expensive back then analog cameras, like with actual film in it.
Yeah.
Right? The cost of the crew, I mean, probably tens of thousands of dollars just in, could even be hundreds of thousands, depending on the cameras, right? So it's a monumental thing. It really is.
Yeah. This, I mean, the demos I've seen, there was one where this guy was able to measure a room in his house just with ARKit. Like, this could completely revolutionize, like, interior decorating, interior design, a number of things. Like, there was a news story a while ago saying that IKEA was partnering with Apple to build ARKit into their app. So, I mean, you could kind of imagine a new version of the IKEA app where you can literally redecorate an entire room with new things from IKEA, visualize what it would actually look like in your house,
right,
one-to-one scale, and then have an itemized shopping list after that.
Right. So instead of spending 4 hours at IKEA, we can spend 8 hours there.
No. That's the beauty of it. You spend 1 hour in IKEA because you've spent 3 hours at home figuring out looks good.
Right. Okay.
So no, that makes perfect sense. Then you just make a beeline to the marketplace. You don't even bother with all the demos and everything. You just go straight to the aisles and go to aisle 6, section 52 and get your Kvalkvik or whatever. Insert weird, lengthy Swedish word here. Yeah. So there's just so many applications for this. Visualizing things in your house, visualizing things in the real world outside, seeing directions in a more visual way, having information about items overlaid on top of the actual things. Just endless ideas. And even for gaming, like one of the examples that was also using the whole portal idea, they put a door in the middle of a public park, and you had to pick up a virtual key to open the door. So they tapped on the key, and then they tapped on the door, and the door opened. And it was an entire 3D thing through the door, and they walked through the door, and they were in that 3D space, and they turned back, and through the door, you could see the real world through the door. And I mean, obviously you're just seeing it through a phone, so it's not 100% immersive, but...
So you're saying there's no reason why we want to live in the real world anymore. I mean, we're just going to have a Matrix thing happening at some point.
Well, I mean, I don't think there's really a lot of utility in having fully virtual content. The idea is that this content mixes with the real world. So you could turn a public park into a vast game space, for example. Like once Apple comes out with the AR glasses, once this is all built into something that fills your entire field of view, you can turn public spaces into whatever you want. You can have art installations floating in the sky. You can play like graphically augmented games of tag or hide and seek or whatever. Like children growing up 20 years from now, if they just grow up with these things, imagine what schoolyard games are going to look like with AR glasses. I mean, I say that, but I mean, obviously not everyone will be able to afford this technology, et cetera. But just thinking about things like that, the way you can just kind of augment something that already exists, but it's kind of like, you know, when you were a kid and you played a game with your friends, and it was kind of like imagination, like you would pretend stuff. AR lets you make that real.
Mm-hmm.
Like in anime, like Yu-Gi-Oh! Is an example. And you saw them playing the card game, and the monsters would pop out of the cards, and kids would like gather around at lunchtime to play the game, and they would imagine that the monsters were coming out of the cards. But with AR glasses, the monsters can actually come out of the cards. You can actually have this stuff unfold in reality, even though it's just a projected image on the glasses. By translating them into that 3D space, it makes it real. And even if you can't touch it, you can just see it. That's still like a huge mm-hmm. leap forward for meshing digital content and reality and just playing with the idea of bringing these imaginary concepts to life.
So other than the obvious fun and practical reasons why this technology exists, going back to the example of this video, which we'll link to in the show notes, what's interesting is to me is that this is really going to change how things like music videos are made.
Yeah.
I mean, just the whole industry of making those types of videos. Obviously, you know, the costs over the year, last, I would say, 5 years, with the cameras that are in smartphones now, people are shooting more and more professional video. And the fact that you can shoot this stuff on a smartphone is incredible. So what does that mean to the industry that makes those music videos? I mean, this is really going to change a lot of lives. I think it's going to make things a lot cheaper. I think it's going to change workflows.
Yeah.
I mean, this really opens up the door for a lot, even just from a creativity standpoint.
Yeah.
I mean, there are limitations of what you can do as far as animation is concerned with a limited budget, limited resources. For the one specific use case of musicians, imagine an indie band. Mm. They don't have $100,000.
Yeah.
For a music video budget. I mean, I'm just excited to see what we'll be able to do.
Oh yeah, like there are limitless applications for art in this space. Just being able to mesh these things with reality. Like I said, art installations floating in the sky. Like Facebook already showed something like that off. They had a wall at their headquarters that was tagged to an AR art installation, and people could hold up their phones, and it was this whole crazy animated thing. And it's almost like there's a hidden layer to the world waiting for us to kind of uncover it. Like, all of this data, all of this information, all of this art is just sitting there waiting to be chiseled away and made visible. It's one thing to scroll through a list on Yelp, but it's another thing altogether to be looking at a restaurant and having their opening hours and their menu and all of that just pop up right in front of you. And it completely changes the way you interact with the world, because suddenly you don't need to pull out your phone. You don't need to ask Siri. You don't need to do anything. It just pops up. You just see it as if it's a sign on the building that says, hey, here's what's up. And that's huge. Like, there is just so much potential there. And it's going to be really exciting to see where this goes. Like, I am immensely looking forward to whatever stage demos Apple has in September. Whatever major app developers have partnered with Apple to build ARKit functionality into the iPhone, into their apps. Like, if they got Facebook on stage, like, Facebook, we know, is seriously into AR. So
this is going to happen.
Facebook will do something. It would be crazy if they announced that Apple Maps in the final version of iOS 11 had an AR mode.
I see that not immediately, but the, you know, the 3D building model view in Maps, I see that being superseded by an AR mode, because that would be more useful.
Yeah.
The 3D locally, view is somewhat useful sometimes for visualizing, like, where you are, because you can see the structures. It's like, oh, that building looks like that. Hmm. But AR would be way more realistic.
Oh, yeah. And especially when you move to glasses, like, it's not a question of, oh, what's around me? Like, you don't need to look that up, because you'll be able to see what's around you. And there will probably be some kind of vocal interface as well, powered by Siri, I'd assume. But for the most part, I think the default view for the glasses will be some kind of ambient AI-powered contextual vision, where things you're looking at, it will display information about those things. Or if you're in a particular location and there's something that the system thinks that you'll enjoy, it'll pop information about that. So, like, let's say you're wearing the glasses all the time. I mean, it's maybe not such a good idea to wear them all the time, but if you're wearing them a good portion of the time and you're just kind of living in that mixed reality space. Let's say you go on a business trip to a new city. You walk out of the airport and imagine you get all of this information about, actually not even like bombarded with lists of information, but like imagine it's like, welcome to this city and here are the top restaurants and here are the top things to do while you're here. And it knows your calendar, so it knows if you can actually fit any of those things into your schedule and 100 other things, all tied into something that you just see. You don't have to look it up. You don't have to ask for it. You don't have to dive down through 50 Google searches. It's just all there right in front of you. And that could be huge. Yeah. Not to mention the potential for enterprise applications. Like, imagine all the spreadsheets you could get rid of if you could just visualize that data. I mean, my company has been doing stuff like that. And it's been huge.
Actually, I didn't even think about that. I mean, like, have some kind of just pipe the data through an API that just outputs immediately into AR.
Yeah. Like,
that would be amazing.
You don't even need to look through a spreadsheet. It's like, oh. And it provides you a new way of looking at things too. So let's say you're Ford or GM or one of these car companies.
Right.
It's one thing to see a bunch of data about how the wind hits the car or how it reacts in an accident. Like, you can see the footage, you can see data points, but imagine putting that into an AR view. Suddenly, it's not about reading all of these numbers or figures or watching footage to try and discern something out of it. Instead, you can actually see a computer model of that car right there in front of you, one-to-one scale, and you can see the wind run across it and see how it flows right in front of you. And you can see a recreation of how it crashes with color coding for metal fatigue. And you can walk around the car as the crash loops and freeze it and rewind it and move it to different points and just kind of get that visceral sense of what the data means. Because you're not just looking at numbers anymore. You're looking at a real object sitting there in front of you.
And that would replace having the need to generate computer models for stuff like that, right? Because if it could be done in real time, that's way better. And to see it in front of your face is so much more useful.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's probably one of the most transformative technologies we've had in a long time. It's probably going to be as big as the smartphone, I would say.
As big as the iPhone 8?
Exactly. It's going to be really exciting. Like, we really are at the ground floor of this stuff. Like, a lot of the current technology is very bulky, but it already shows huge promise. And I think iOS with ARKit is definitely ahead of the pack because Apple is essentially shepherding mainstream adoption of this technology. Because, I mean, to Google's credit, they've been working on this stuff. They have Google Tango, and it does the same thing, albeit more advanced because it actually has time of flight AR sensors. But Tango is only on two phones and they're Lenovo. So, I mean, how many people have those phones? Not a lot.
All of 12, right?
Yeah. So here's Apple sitting here going, we've got ARKit and it's on any device with an A9 chip or better, any device. So iPad Pro, iPhone SE, iPhone 7, iPhone 6S, iPhone 7S, iPhone 8, iPhone Pro, whatever. All of those devices can view AR in real time. That's millions of people that are going to be able to view AR content seamlessly. And with the iPhone Pro or the 7S or both or whatever they're planning to do, there will be actual AR sensors on the hardware. So you have this base level of AR that's in every iOS device. And then on top of that, the new hardware coming in, it's going to be able to scan and visualize the space that the device is in. So it's not just a question of displaying things anymore. Suddenly you get a whole new dimension because the phone knows what's around it. It knows the objects in the room. It knows the height. It knows the shape. It can read surface details. Like, this is really sophisticated stuff. And as it scans the room, it can generate a point cloud. So it can map all of this in real time and then enable insane things like physics on 3D objects. So imagine an AR ball that you throw into a room and it bounces off of actual objects in the room. So you just drop a ball in and it bounces on this table here. And then it goes onto the floor. And then it bounces into the TV. All of that is possible with these sensors because suddenly it knows the geometry of the space. So it's not just a collection of estimated surfaces anymore. It's, this is the actual shape of the room around the device.
Right.
And so not only with physics, but it'll also be able to calculate plane collisions. So currently the AR kit stuff, it estimates where the surface of a table is, and then it places the object on it. But if you move the phone below the table, you can still see the object that you placed because it doesn't have a sense of the 3D shape of the table. So with these sensors, it will have a sense of the shape of the table. So as you move the new hardware, those 3D objects that have been placed into the world will actually disappear behind the real world objects. So if you put a vase on this table and you move the phone below the table, the vase would disappear because it knows that it placed it on top of the table. And it knows the exact measurements of how thick the table is and if there's gaps in it and all of that stuff.
Be interesting, we're probably far away from this, but just to see where this stuff will go for things like, just thinking on the fly here, but in a situation where you're a pilot, for example, what if you had a heads-up display and sensors on the plane, and let's say you had to make an emergency landing. If you could somehow use the sensors to pick up details about the immediate surroundings that are, you know, 10,000 feet away, and then the computer could, like, the AI could calculate and visualize and show you this is statistically probably the safest place to land the plane. Think about how amazing that would be.
Well, I don't think you'd have sensors that would go far enough for that to work, but luckily we have high-res topography scans from satellites, so you could crunch that through an AI, and it could come up with the best place to land pretty much anywhere in the world. Obviously, that's a lot of data, but if it's all in the cloud, pretty easy. Of course, you'd better hope the plane has a good internet connection.
Right. First, I think they need to solve the issue of you're not allowed to turn your phone on.
Yeah.
On the plane.
That's bullshit. They just do that to feel important.
So, speaking of devices you reshoot, let's move to our second topic here, which is a report from 9to5Mac.com by Benjamin Mayo that says the alleged iPhone 8 packaging insert shows off a bezel-less notch screen design. What's that about?
Right. So a suspicious image has leaked of a diagram for the SIM tray on the new iPhone. So in every iPhone box, there's a little simple diagram that shows you how to eject the SIM tray. And that's usually printed on the little insert that has the SIM eject tool. So in this case, it shows a graphic that pretty much looks like all of the leaks for the iPhone Pro 8, 7S, whatever the hell. I keep going back and forth on this. I don't even know what to call it anymore. The upcoming iPhone. I don't know. But yeah, so it shows something very similar to the upcoming iPhone. All screen on the front, a little notch at the top for the camera and the sensors, a larger than normal lock button on the side, the mute button, the volume rockers, that's all the same. And I don't know. I mean, it could be legit. It might not be. It's really hard to say at this point. I mean, why right, would that leak mm-hmm. and not actual parts?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
I was just thinking that.
Maybe it's easier to get something like that out than parts, which, I mean, maybe that's why it's actually legit. Maybe it's just easier now to get things like that out of the factory than it is to get actual parts. But it feels like it's too early to be getting leaks of actual packaging inserts. Like, we're not even in August yet. We're about to be in August, but as far as I know, like from everything I know about iPhone production, they mainly focus on building all the components, and then like in August, it all starts coming together. So August is when the boxes start getting constructed, the inserts start getting printed out, they assemble the phones. Like, all of the ramp up, that is printing logic boards and adding the A11 chip onto the logic boards and things like that. August is when they go full into, we are putting these phones together and cramming them into boxes, putting them on pallets, shipping them to Apple stores all around the world. That, like, August is when that starts. So either they're starting that process early, which doesn't make sense given all the reports of supply constraints, or it's fake, or maybe it's some kind of print test, like it's a graphic that they got from Cupertino and they're like, hey, print this out, we want to see how it looks on the actual paper, blah blah blah, like some kind of proof, which, I mean, that's a thing that's done. I mean, in graphic design, that happens all the time. Like, you come up with this graphic and you want to make sure it looks good when it's actually printed out. So, I mean, that could be it. But I don't know. At this point, right. Everything just feels like...
It's too early.
Everything just feels like we have no idea what this phone is.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I am like 90% sure of so many things that are going into this phone. But I'm still totally in the dark about that 10% that really matters the most. Like, is there a 7S? Is this a Pro? What's happening with that? Are there going to be delays? Is it going to be ready for September? How much is it actually going to cost? How many are they going to have? Like, there's so many questions. And nothing has leaked that answer any of those questions.
Well, I mean, August is just around the corner next week, so that may still happen. But what I can tell you, something that is 100% actually happening or did happen this week, is this Thursday, Apple updated its iPod lineup and announced that they are discontinuing the Nano and Shuffle, which are the last two iPods that did not run iOS.
Correct. It is the end of an era.
It is an end of an era, really. And it looks like minor updates to the iPod Touch, a bigger capacity.
Yeah.
Mostly, I think.
That's all they changed, yeah.
Just the double capacity.
Yeah. Same internals.
Oh, they did cut the price on the model with, it says, oh, It says the price of the iPod Touch, essentially an iPhone without cellular service, has been cut. It now comes with 32 gigabytes of storage for $199 and 128 gigabytes for $299. That's US dollars, I believe.
Yeah. So that was the price of the 16 and the 32 previously, or the 16 and the 64.
Is anyone honestly going to be sad about the shuffle going away, though? I mean, I never liked that thing without a display.
I don't really care. I mean, I think Gruber nailed it on the head. Like, at this point, everyone just uses their phones. The whole limitation of the iPod was that you had to sync it to a computer. And the iPhone breaks through all of those limitations.
Well, I'm sure there still is a market for the iPod because there are people that, like young people maybe, that don't necessarily need a phone right away. And I'm sure they're obviously still selling the iPods, and that's why they haven't discontinued the entire line. But it wouldn't surprise me if that's not far away. Because as cell phones become ubiquitous, as we become more and more connected, even I know people and some parents continue to fight it, but I think the day is coming where kids in elementary school will all have phones, whether it's an actual phone in the configuration that we now understand, being a, rectangular piece of metal in our pockets, whether it's a smartwatch or whether it's, glasses with a heads up display or contact lens, whatever that form factor is going to be, I think at some point it's inevitable that everybody will be connected.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's pretty much a given at this point. Like,
and I'll add, for better or worse.
Yeah, better or worse. There's no going back. Like, this is just where things are going. And to deny that is to deny the reality of the situation. Like, you can't ignore this. Like, you can't stick your head in the sand and go, oh, I'm never going to connect, because you're just going to miss out on so many opportunities and possibilities and information and education and everything. Like, to completely disconnect anymore, I think, is impossible. I mean, unless you want to go live in the woods somewhere.
Yeah, I see kids in school, teachers giving instructions, and everyone's got, AR contact lenses. And so, like, the lesson that they're going over, that visually in the air, they're seeing it.
Oh, yeah.
They're seeing, like, stuff in front of them, and that could really... A lot of people are very visual learners.
Yeah.
People learn that way, and to have that capability in a classroom would probably be a really useful thing.
Oh yeah.
I mean, like, and you could limit it. I'm sure the teacher, they'll have parental controls.
Yeah.
The teacher could limit it so that they can only access whatever is happening in the classroom.
Yeah.
They can't access the internet and be on Facebook invisibly while the teacher is giving a lesson. Like, there will be safeguards in place.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think you touched on something really important there. Like, that's another avenue that this could be huge: education. Like, imagine going to history class and instead of reading a stuffy textbook about how the battle of whatever went, no, we're just going to throw an entire digital reenactment of the battle in front of you real time.
That could get pretty gruesome right away.
Well, I mean,
it'd be fine in high school.
Yeah.
Yeah. Watch the Battle of Gettysburg and people get shot and impaled.
Well, they can do the Age of Empires thing where people just fall over. Like, it doesn't have to be, like, super realistic, but yeah.
Or people get killed, but no blood, right? You just turn that off or something.
Yeah. I mean, whatever you have to do. But the important thing is being able to visualize that stuff. Like, it's one thing to read it in a book, but it's another thing to actually see it in front of you. And that's a theme that just keeps repeating itself with this technology. Like, being able to visualize stuff is just so much better. I mean, there's still something to be said for reading, obviously. Like, fiction, that's never going to go away. But for technical stuff, for textbooks, visualizing it is going to be so much better than reading it, especially for things like history, like being able to see the Great Pyramid and suddenly do an X-ray cutaway where you can see all of the chambers and passageways. And
it'll make it like it'll make learning fun.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll take it to a whole new level.
It would almost turn the classroom into the magic school bus, basically.
Right, exactly.
Like, instead of reading about this stuff and being bored, suddenly it's like, oh, we're actually going to go there in augmented reality. Suddenly you're standing in the middle of a pyramid.
Yeah, exactly.
And all of these things. And that's huge. Now, obviously, it's going to take some time before that filters down to classrooms and things like that, because it's going to start out expensive and schools want things that are cheap. So obviously, it's going to take some time, but I think if anyone is going to be able to get it into classrooms, it's Apple. So,
well, like any major technology, this stuff, you know, once everyone buys into the idea of, okay, well, this is how we do things now, that stuff will just naturally get cheaper and cheaper and cheaper.
Well,
where
yeah.
everybody just has it at some point.
Yeah.
Look at cell phones.
Yeah.
Remember the size of these massive bricks with huge antennas
yeah.
and, you know, the battery life was terrible.
And they cost hundreds of dollars.
More than $1,000 for a phone. Like, you could spend $2,000 for a cell phone back
yeah.
in the day. It was a privilege.
Yeah.
To have one, and you needed money, so and cell phone plans were expensive back then. You got no data. There was no internet.
Yeah,
just to have the ability to talk to someone on the phone was crazy expensive.
Yeah, it's pretty insane how far we've come in 20 years. So I mean, 20 more years. Yeah.
You almost can't, like, you can sort of extrapolate, but it's really hard to see that far out. Like, 20 years is a long time.
Yeah.
And if you try to predict the future based on the progress of the last 20 years of the past, it's like, like you said in your own words, we've moved so fast. So to see what the next 20 years is like, it blows my mind. I'm not even sure I can go there.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many things that are probably givens, like AR will be ubiquitous, VR will be ubiquitous, we'll have better immersion hardware, haptic gloves, or whatever that ends up being. Self-driving cars will be everywhere, more green tech, hopefully we'll have started to combat global warming by then, and fossil fuels will basically be a thing of the past. Yeah, I don't know. Advances in carbon reclamation technology, biotech is going to leap forward pretty quickly. Genetic resequencing, CRISPR, all of those things are going to take off.
We may need to come back to this on another episode. I don't know if you saw there's an article today about a bionic arm implants, the Deus Ex arm that somebody actually, like, they made it and actually attached it to someone and just like sending nerve impulses to the brain. And that's insanely
They've been working
amazing.
On that for a while.
Yeah.
It's gotten better and better. Every single version that they do has been more and more impressive.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that's another huge thing. And really that's just a stopgap until we can print out new limbs using stem cells. Like, that'll be the next big frontier. Like, actually printing out organic parts instead of building mechanical replacements. There's so many little things that'll just change everything in such big ways. And a lot of it's hard to know what's actually going to take off or what breakthroughs are going to be made in the next few years that change all of it.
You've been listening to the Impromptu One Hologram Radio. I'm Alex Knight, joined by Michael Norton, as always. If you'd like to show your support for this podcast and the work that we do here, the single best way to do that is to go to patreon.com/hologramradio and donate today. Subscribe to the podcast in iTunes to ensure you get every new episode each and every week. And do leave us a review if you have a moment that makes us feel good, as well as helps other people find the podcast. We're also available in Google Play Music, TuneIn, and Stitcher as well if you'd like to stream it there. And wherever else you can find podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at The Impromptu. Michael Norton is at Zen Impulse. I'm at Zero Distraction. And if you'd like to send us feedback the old-fashioned way, you can email us at theimpromptu@hologramradio.org, and that will go to both myself and Michael.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.